Good morning, Wake Up HEC, Cris Oviedo, Brendan Byrne.
Hello.
Awake and in the studio this Monday morning.
So awake.
Brendan, I don't know. Do you watch Game of Thrones? I don't think I've ever asked you this question.
Yeah, I'm in and out. I got to catch back up. I've been kind of tuning in.
Okay.
The latest season.
You did not watch the season finale, the so much awaited.
My roommates had it on, so like I glimpsed like a chunk of it, but not all of it.
Okay. All right. Fair. That's a fair point. And, you know, it's four of us here in studio this morning, this Monday morning, where close to 11 million people were calling out today.
<That's>
are some of the numbers that I have heard, because Game of Thrones finale was last night. And people were taking the day off today because they were having parties. They were going to stay up and watch it. But I guess four of us didn't do any of that.
<That's>
right?
Really.
I know, right? I prefer sleep over the finale of Game of Thrones. That would have been the first episode. If I had decided to watch it, that would have been my first episode ever.
Yeah, you would have been lost.
Right? I don't think I would have understood too much. But this morning we are here in studio with friends from NAMI, and that's the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We have Denise Juliana. She's the executive director.
Hi.
Good morning. Good welcome.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
And we also have Steve Gray, and he's the president of the board of directors of NAMI. Welcome.
Good
Welcome,
morning.
Steve.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you guys for not watching the finale and joining us this morning.
Sure.
And, you know, we want to talk about NAMI. We want to talk about the National Alliance of Mental Illness. And I'm making an emphasis on the full name rather than just the four letters that we know it by, because we are going to talk about mental illness, and I'm hoping to debunk some myths this morning about mental illness. But before we do that, I always like to get to know my guests a little bit. And I know that at least Steve has like a really close relationship and personal relationship with the organization. But let's start with you, Denise, and let us know a little bit about yourself. And, you know, we want to find out who you are and how did you get to be the executive director of NAMI?
Luck, I guess. it was It was good luck. So I grew up in Ohio, and I went to college there too, and I wanted to work for a member of Congress. So I moved here in the, I guess, mid-90s and worked for...
I'm going to stop you right there. You wanted to work for a member of Congress. I mean, that's just fascinating on its own, that statement right there. What was driving you
for
that?
Well, I actually had gotten accepted into the School of Communications, didn't know what I wanted to do with that, but I thought, well, okay, I can talk to people. but then I went on a government trip to D.C., and we met with our congressman, and I decided at that point, I want to do that.
Interesting.
So I finished up school and moved to D.C. and had an unpaid internship with a member of Congress and worked for several different ones before I left and became a lobbyist, and did that for about a year or two until I had my first child. So then I stopped working for a while, and he had some special needs. So it was the right decision for me at the time. And then I raised two other kids after him, and decided maybe about 2 years ago now, I was ready to go back, and I wanted to go back in a part-time capacity. So I heard about this job and applied for it, and it was wonderful. Mm. I mean, because I also have a couple different family members who live with mental illness, and one close family member that has some pretty intense anxiety episodes. And so it's an issue that's close to me, and I feel really like I can understand and relate to a lot of the families that call our office.
That's great. And it's nice because, you know, we hear mental illness and we talk about it. And I think nowadays, especially, we really are coming to finally understand it, right? And have more awareness and not see it as a myth or, you know, something that we need to hide from. Right. So it's great that you bring that personal perspective into your job and can connect better with families. Mm-hmm. Because I would think it's still something that's intimidating for many people to talk about.
Absolutely.
And to really raise a hand and say, yes, I think I have, you know, mental illness and I need some help. I think it's still kind of like embarrassing almost, you know, to talk about it.
For sure.
Is that what you find with
Absolutely.
Your clients?
That stigma is a big part of the reason people don't talk about it.
Right.
And it's honestly not treated the same way as a regular illnesses in society. So if you had diabetes, you would go to the doctor and get insulin for your diabetes.
Right
but
away.
People don't always feel that, well, maybe it's not really what I think it is. Maybe it's just this, maybe it's just that, or that their family doesn't really believe them or think that there's anything wrong. And so there's a lot of apprehension and stigma and I don't want to out myself and, you know, that sort of thing. So we definitely see that a lot.
Right. And Steve, what has been your journey, you know, into being the president of the board of directors?
Well, thank you for asking. My history with NAMI actually began when my oldest son began to have symptoms. And we didn't know anything about it. And when you're thrust into this, it's often without any background at all. In my family's case, I had a grandmother who I think now had schizophrenia, but we didn't recognize it. Her mother spent a lot of her adult years in a state mental hospital, and in those days they called it nervous breakdown. It was the code word for everything that was happening to people that they couldn't explain otherwise. So it began there, and my son, when he became ill and diagnosed with schizophrenia, he needed a lot from us, and we didn't know anything about any of it. And people began to tell us about NAMI, and we said what most people say, which is, what is that? And none of us knew anything about it. So we signed up for a class. It's called Family to Family. And when you have an ill relative like my son, you want to sit down with the doctor and spend, I don't know, 30 hours, let's just say, trying to understand everything, and the doctors didn't have time.
Right.
So NAMI, that's what that class is, actually. It's a 30-hour class where people in the class meet 2.5 hours a week, one night a week, and you learn all about it. You learn the illnesses, the meds, and all that stuff. So it was a very life-changing thing for my wife and I when we went through it. And my involvement with NAMI was really on the basis of wanting to pay back, to try to help other people come to the same understanding. One of my favorite lines that I read in a book called Surviving Schizophrenia, which is by a psychiatrist whose name is E. Fuller Torrey, he said, compassion follows understanding. And that's been my experience with helping people understand about mental illness. Once they understand, they have more compassion.
And you said something that kind of spiked my curiosity a little bit, because you said your son started developing symptoms. So he wasn't born, or you didn't know that he had this when he was born?
He actually didn't have it until perhaps late teen years. You're never quite sure. One of the things you do when you encounter this for the first time is you start to ask yourself, when did all this start?
Right.
And one of the complicating things about the illnesses that we're going to talk about is that the symptoms begin in teenage years. And in those years, there's many things in play. And no one, including my wife and I, came to mental illness as the first thing to consider. It's the last thing you consider. And in between starting to see things and then coming to that conclusion reluctantly, is that you say there's things with puberty, there's things with growing up, there's things with drugs and alcohol.
Right.
You sort of check all those boxes and then you finally end up with the diagnosis, and then it begins to make more sense. My son's diagnosis was at 20, and that's exactly the peak year for schizophrenia, actually, when it occurs. It happens sometimes very early and sometimes very late, but it's typically the bell curve centers right around age 20.
So what were some of the things that you started noticing that, you know, made you think, I need to start going and taking him, like you said, to the doctor, checking about drugs and things like that? I mean, what were some of the things that he started doing that were...
Well, you know, we didn't see them at the time. When he was at College Park in his freshman year, he did fabulously well. Physics major, wanted to do research, very bright kid, still is. But he began to, and this was all in retrospect, but he began to wonder if people in the dorm plaza outside the dorm were talking about him, that he wanted to move away from the groups of people. So the paranoia is common with mm-hmm. schizophrenia. So that was one of the things we saw after the fact, but nothing very dramatic. But he had a psychotic break in the spring of 2005, and that was very dramatic, and it became right to the hospital and that type of thing. So it's quite often very low level. Schizophrenia is sort of unusual. Depression comes in very low level. And one of the complicating things for parents is that when you see things like this, you don't know whether it's mental illness or not. And one of the things that we publish in NAMI is 10 warning signs. And the typical advice when someone, as a parent, comes forward and says, "What is this?" You look at these warning signs, and if there's three or four of them and they persist for a couple of weeks, and then the big one for me is that they get in the way of his leading his life. Suddenly he can't sleep, he can't go to school, he can't interact with friends, that type of thing. So that's the red flag, and I would urge all the listeners that if life starts getting interrupted, that's the point when you seek out help.
You know, and how scary it must be for you as a parent. I mean, and really not, like you were saying, Denise, you know, the people who call you, it sounded like that was the last box that you checked off of the checklist that you were going through. So let's go a little bit more into mental illness and talk about that. For the parents who call you, do you usually find that that's the last thing that they've thought about, that they've already gone, like Steve here, you know, he went and thought maybe alcohol, maybe drugs, maybe other things, so many other things, and at the last, just the last option, the last thing that he looked at was mental illness. Would you say that that's because we are unaware of it? Would you say that that's because we maybe reject that idea, that
we don't
want to believe?
It's a combination of both. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If you're not looking for it, you wouldn't necessarily know what it is.
Right.
And like Steve said, there's a lot of things in the teenage years that you're thinking, well, is it stress from school? Is it puberty? Is it, you know, anything? It
right.
could be anything. I mean, I have two teenagers, and you know, there's lots of drama, and you just don't know,
right?
And so I think a lot of the callers, I think when they call, they don't know how common mental illness really is, and one in five adults have it. That's pretty common.
One in five.
And the other statistic that I think is important to mention is 75% of mental illness begins by age 24, which is why it's so important that this college age, mm-hmm. the kids at this college age understand it and are aware of it and understand the signs. And we can talk about some of those in a little bit.
Yeah, let's go ahead and dive right into those signs. Because you said you guys have come up with a list of 10 signs, right?
I didn't put all, I don't have all 10 of them, mm-hmm. but you might want to chime in with some too, Steve.
Keep going, I'll look it up.
So feeling sad and withdrawn for more than 2 weeks, like intense sadness and just feeling like you can't carry on for 2 weeks or more,
mm-hmm.
I think is a major sign. Sudden overwhelming fear for no apparent reason. Drastic changes in mood, behavior, personality. Intense worries or fears that, again, get in the way of your daily activities. And trying to harm oneself or talking about planning to do it. Those are some of the major ones. But I would say that, you know, diagnoses must be made by clinical mm-hmm. professionals. Mm-hmm. But if you are either experiencing those, if any of those resonated with you or with a family member, you're noticing it in a family member, then it could be mental illness.
Right. And I like that you said it could be because, you know, I mean, just like when you Google your symptoms, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, I have a headache and this hurts and this, that. And Google is like, oh, you have 2 weeks left.
Yeah, right.
This, you know, I think that it's important to understand that these are just warning signs. And it's just kind of like what we're trying to tell you here is to consider that it could be
right.
a mental illness. It may not be. It might be something else,
sure.
but it could very well be a mental illness. So it's like kind of like what we're trying to do here this morning is to bring awareness and put it on the forefront, just like we said, like diabetes and all of these other illnesses that you consider and keep it as one of the options that it could be so that you don't delay treatment. Because the key here, I think, from what I've understood through conversations and through reading and research, is that Mental illness many times goes unnoticed for a very long period of time, so the symptoms get worsened, right? And treatment, it's a lot more difficult, just like with any other illness, and recovery, it's a lot harder. So when you start seeing the symptoms, when you start seeing these warnings, what is the first and best thing that parents could do? If there's, you know, some of the symptoms that you read and they start noticing in somebody they love, maybe their kids, maybe, I mean, their significant other or just any other family member, what can we do if we start seeing and worrying about things like that?
Well, I would say as a parent, the first thing you should do is make an appointment with your pediatrician and mm-hmm. talk to the pediatrician about it for sure. The other thing I would say is learn all you can about mental illness. With one of our classes, it's for parents of school-age children, but you don't actually have to have a diagnosed mental illness. You can just have concerns. If the behavior at school is not there seems to be some difficulties at school, concentrating, acting out, you can still take the class. It's a six-week class. And I want to say, because I know I'm going to forget, and it's very important, all of our classes and programs that we have are free, completely free. So we have three education classes for families, for parents, and for individuals with mental illness. And all of these classes, like Steve was mentioning, are meant to help parents, families, individuals understand mental illness and the different medications that are available mm-hmm. and the different therapies and what the options are, and also to help that family member or parent learn to help their child or family member manage the illness and not learn to set boundaries. That's important because you have to, if you're caring for someone with mental illness, you also have to have your own time.
Right.
And because if you're not well enough, you can't care for someone else.
Absolutely.
So that's important too.
Absolutely. So let's talk about some of the services and programs that NAMI offers for anybody who might be interested in coming. What are some of the things that they can come and find where you guys are?
Okay. Well, the classes I mentioned, and we typically have those in the spring and the fall. Okay. You just have to call the office to sign up. We provide materials, so we do have a registration process, but there's no real, I mean, you don't have to have anything specific, really, for requirements. We also have support groups, which mirror the education classes, so they're for families. If you have you have a family member or a friend that you're caring for that has mental illness, you can go to the family support group, parent support group for kids. And we also have a transition age youth support group for parents of that transition age, which can be a very difficult age. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is our connections support group, which is for individuals living with mental illness. So all of these support groups, they're typically twice a month. They are anonymous and they're free. Mm-hmm. So you can just show up. We have all this information on our website, too, which is www.namihowardcounty.org.
Okay.
I'll try to remember to say it again at the end, but if you just Google NAMI Howard County, you would get right to it.
Right.
But we also have a couple other education some of our other education programming. We have a program called In Our Own Voice where we have trained volunteers who go out into the community and talk about their experience living with mental illness. Mm. And they really are stories of hope. I mean, they're wonderful to listen to. I mean, mental illness can't be cured, but you can manage it and you can live well with it with the right supports in place. And that's what these presentations are meant to do. We have we have a program in the high schools also to help staff, parents, and students understand mental illness and suicide. And we have education forums that are just every other month in the community, we pick a topic and just hope to educate the public about different things with mental illness. We usually have one on faith and spirituality, but also we had one, Ask a Cop. So what happens in a mental health crisis? What happens when you call the police?
Yeah.
And that was really an interesting one, too.
And I'm really glad that you brought that up because on one of our podcasts, Healthy Minds, we actually had somebody from the a police officer who works with that. And they told us that their training has also changed. And, you know, they're becoming more aware that when they go into a certain situation, they need to try to understand if this is driven, you know, by a mental illness, and there's a very different protocol that starts to take place.
And we're involved in that training. It's called crisis intervention training, and we give a presentation at the beginning of that week. They do that twice a year, and it does help the officers understand. And when if you are a parent and you need to call an officer, specifically ask for one that's trained in mental health, because I mean they all are eventually going to be they're working through the through the force.
It's a transition, right?
Yes, but it's really helpful to ask for that specifically, so that that officer comes knowing what they may be encountering. Mm-hmm. So.
Absolutely.
And in my son's case, when he first got ill, the police and the ambulance responded when called, but he was agitated, and they tackled him and handcuffed him and put him on the gurney. Mm. And all of that wasn't necessary if you know how to de-escalate. One of the great things about CIT from the police perspective is that it's actually a win for them, because it makes their job safer.
Right.
That they know how to do it in a way that doesn't aggravate the situation into violence.
And I would think that as a parent calling for your child, the last thing you want to do as a parent is have to call the police, or, you know, see a picture like the one you just painted to us, right? Something like that happening to your kids. So it's got to put you at ease to know that you can call and know that somebody who has the right training is going to come and help you just handle the situation. So Steve, you know, actually thinking about that, when you first heard about the you know, when you finally discovered that it was a mental illness that you were dealing with, that it wasn't something different, and you found NAMI, What was that like for you? What did it mean for you to find this? Because I'm sure that it was a very lonely place before that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. The faith community that we were a part of at the time, very helpful. But I think looking back, they didn't know what to do, and we never heard from them. Mm. So there's a very big component of being lonely, because you're by yourself. You think you're the only one going through this. When I went to the class, when my wife and I attended the class, our story we thought was pretty horrific, and we looked around the room, and there were 22 other people, and they had stories that were worse than the one that we were living in. So that was just good all by itself. You suddenly had people around you that understood. They get it.
Right.
I think the other thing about the trauma of mental illness is that, and we spoke about treatment a few minutes ago, but one of the things that's recent in terms of the research and the evidence is that if you intervene early when someone has a psychotic illness, and psychosis is not an illness, it's a symptom. And so people with depression can have psychosis, people with bipolar disorder can have psychosis, schizophrenia can have psychosis. When you intervene early, and there are some very novel programs where they look at it holistically and comprehensively, but the results in terms of fighting off the illness progression is great. So early is good. That's one of the biggest, strongest messages of NAMI, is if you can get through the stigma and get to treatment, your chances of living in recovery, as Denise described earlier, are infinitely better.
That's great. And that's great to know. And that's good to hear. You know, it's good to hear that if you are facing a situation like this, if you're listening or watching and you're facing a situation like this, and like Steve, you have support groups that for your regular life, right? They're there for you, but maybe just don't know how to help you in this type of situation. It's good to turn to places like NAMI, where there's staff and people who deal with it every day, who are going through it, so you don't feel separated and isolated from everyone else, and who will be there ready to just help you navigate and understand and find the resources and give you some of those resources right there in-house in NAMI.
Well, and you don't, if you go to one of the support groups, you can just listen. And you don't have to share if you don't want to. But I think one of the wonderful byproducts of the education classes is that you also are getting that support. So you can go to a support group and get extra support, but also from the education classes, just being in that environment and hearing these stories, it does on one hand makes you maybe feel a little grateful that your situation isn't as worse as someone else, but it also helps to open your mind that there are, first of all, there's lots of people going through this.
Right.
And it's just, it's a wonderful way to get that support, because a lot of the callers that we get, they feel like they're the only person going through it.
Right.
And it's just simply not true. I mean, with one in five adults living with mental illness, I mean, the odds are excellent that we all right. know somebody.
Right.
Or care for somebody that right. has a mental illness.
Absolutely. And I mean, just in this room with those chances, I mean, we're basically saying one of us either knows or is dealing with something like this personally, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, just in this one room right now.
When I first became involved with NAMI, one of the statistics that I read, and I'm always suspicious of simple statistics, is that one in four at the time, one in five now, have some kind of an illness, and I didn't believe it. So I went to the website of NIMH, and I said, okay, how often does it actually occur? And what I found out is that if you add the occurrence rates of cardiac disease and hypertension and cancer, if you add all that together, it's still not as frequent as mental illnesses.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it is very much more common than people think. The other thing that I became motivated by were these two things. One is that NAMI has a great sign that is hanging on the wall in most NAMI offices, and it's all the people that are famous that lived with some kind of mental disorder. Abraham Lincoln,
From the very foundation.
Right. And one of the things that became real obvious looking at it through this other lens is that Vincent van Gogh is a famous painter, mm-hmm. and one of the things that was asserted about him, and other people with illness have said the same thing, is that his brilliance, his visual brilliance, was in fact a function of his delusions. He was over-agitated visually, and he began to paint paintings like Starry Night, where the visuals are very exaggerated. So it actually made his art better. Because of it. And people with illness often talk about that. Would you go back and go through your life without the diagnosis? And part of me would, and this person said, but part of me wouldn't. I'm a very much better human being because of going through it, and compassion, and it helps their art.
Mm. Well, and it just shows, too, that mental illness doesn't discriminate. I mean, right. young, old, any racial or ethnic group, famous people. Right. I mean, there's been a lot of celebrities recently, Demi Lovato, Michael Phelps, lots of people that you hear about that are coming forward with, it's very courageous. Right. I mean, absolutely. Especially if they're in the public eye. And, you know, Demi Lovato has had several breakdowns. And so I really admire her for being so open about it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like our culture recently, just as the past span of the past 10 years, has become a lot more accepting of it. Because the perception on mental illness originally seemed to be, you are less than if you have this. You are not a complete person.
Right.
You're less than a complete person.
Right.
But it's just so common. It doesn't detract from your humanity. It's ridiculous.
Right.
It's
right.
just very common struggle that a lot of people deal with, and in a lot of cases can learn to work through.
Right.
It's more common than everyone seems to think it is.
Right.
And the famous people that succeed in spite of it.
Yes.
Fly in the face of that myth that you can't live a full life.
Absolutely. And that's very inspiring. That's very, very inspiring. And it's very hopeful to know that, you know, mental illness, it's just an illness, and it needs, with the right treatment, it does not have to stop you from carrying on a good, prosperous life.
That's exactly right.
So we're about running out of time on our radio broadcast. Let's wrap up with just telling everybody how to get in touch with you guys, the number they need to call, where you guys are located, where they can find you, and reminding them of the website.
Sure. So our phone number is 410-772-9300. We're located over on Santiago Road in the Stevens Forest Professional Building. And then our website is www.namihowardcounty.org. I just wanted to mention that NAMI is a national organization that was founded in the late 70s. And each state has its own
like branch?
Own chapter, yes. Except for West Virginia, I understand. I'm not sure why that is. But they have other affiliates, but not a state chapter. But NAMI Maryland happens to be located here in Columbia, too. So sometimes there's a little bit of confusion.
Okay.
But we operate independently of them, but we collaborate with them. Obviously, they're our state affiliate. But we service Howard County. Like even for our classes, if someone lives outside the county, because some of the neighboring counties don't have all of the classes or services. So you can certainly attend. You don't have to be a county resident to be able to come to our classes. And for instance, the family-to-family class, we're not able to offer it in Spanish, but the Prince George's County offers it in Spanish. So we try to kind of refer people to the affiliates that they are looking for, just to, you know, since we can't provide all of the services and they can't provide all of the services.
And one other thing, Chris, I'd like to add is that you don't have to be a member to attend any of these services. We pitch that. We like that. We ask people to join if they can. We have an open door membership that is $6 a year if you can't afford the $60 that a family would pay or a $40 individual fee. But the other thing that comes with that is you're members of both of all three levels, NAMI Howard County, NAMI Maryland, and NAMI nationally. So you get information, email, you have lots of access to all those services.
Wonderful. Let's repeat that phone number again, Denise, just one more time.
410-772-9300.
So there's hope, and you can call it at 410-772-9300 just to understand, or even if you don't have a personal situation, but you know the stigma that it's behind it, and you've seen it in other people around you, and you want to get involved, and you want to help, and you want to learn more about it, just contact Denise and, you know, get involved. Go to some of the classes, listen to it, read more about it. Let's break that stigma off, because none of us are free of, you know, either having a mental illness or knowing somebody we love or around us who might encounter that situation in life. So thank you both for coming and bringing hope.
Absolutely. One more thing. The last thing I wanted to say is just that we have our NAMI Maryland has a walk that's coming up. That's a large fundraiser for us, and all of the affiliates are raising money for that. But we would love if you could join us. It's June 1st at Rash Field in Baltimore, and it's a big fundraising walk for NAMI. You can also find a link to that on our website with more information.
So check it out, get involved, help, and let's break the stigma together. Let's all stay together, you know, to really, I think, normalize and understand and be more compassionate, you know, in regards to mental illness. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Sure,
we're
going to
shut our broadcast now here on the radio station. We'll stay on Facebook and carry the conversation just a little bit longer. Have a wonderful Monday, everybody. Stay cool today. It's the first time we've had to say that.
At least no rain, right?
Right. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a good one.
Bye, guys.
Thank you guys for sharing your personal stories. How's your son doing?
He's doing really well. He lives on his own. He returned to driving. He works a part-time job.
Oh, that's great.
And he actually has written a book. He went back and finished college, and he's written a book about his experiences, and he's in the middle of editing.
That's wonderful. And see, that's what's so great about it, and having places like NAMI is like, because I'm sure that when people first find out that, like in your case, their son or somebody has or is going through a mental illness, you think they're confined. Their life is over and that's it, right? Mm-hmm. And then to hear stories like yours, we're like, no, he's living on his own. He's driving. He wrote a book. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait, what?
Yep.
Like, how did that happen? Like, that's impossible, right? That's the idea that we have right now, that it's impossible, that you have a mental illness. Well, it's kind of like you're done for. It's the stigma that comes with it.
It's
like,
and it's just not true.
And it's just not true. Yeah.
I mean, you have to acknowledge it. You have to get the right support.
Right.
But they're out there, and that's where I think NAMI comes in. We really try to help connect people with different resources in the community, but also provide what we can provide, which, you know, that's the best part about all our programs is they're free. So they're accessible to, I mean, just call us and or go to the website and you can find out more information. If you have questions, call.
Right. Do you guys accept volunteers? Are you ever looking for volunteers for any of your services, or is this all staff driven?
No.
No, it's actually the volunteer side is critical. All the programs are done by volunteers. The staff helps facilitate and coordinate and answer the phone and do those kinds of things, but all the programs are volunteer driven.
So if people want to volunteer, they just need to get in touch with you guys.
Sure. And even if you want to, if you feel comfortable sharing your own story with mental illness, you get trained by NAMI Maryland, and then you learn how to kind of hone that story and stick to the facts. And so that's all a free training that they do periodically, depending on if it's training to teach the class or training to facilitate a support group or training to give your to share your story.
Right.
So all of that, they're all done by volunteers, but they're trained. So you wouldn't have to worry about that.
Thank you guys again. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.